It is Free Talk Live, talk radio that you control, the only show where you can call in and talk about anything that's on your mind. That toll-free number is 855-450-3733. With you in the studio tonight, it's Aria.
And it's Ian.
And for those who missed the news, the PlayStation 5 and the Xbox, I don't even know what this one's called. Do you happen to know?
I've lost track of all the Xbox things because they call it different names. They're not going in a sequential order. So there was like the Xbox, plain Xbox, and then there was, I think the 360 came after that.
Yeah, the 360 was next, and then it was the One.
The One. Okay, see, I couldn't remember the most recent one.
Or as people like to call it, the X-Bone.
Okay.
And I don't know what the name of the new one is either, but evidently people are upset because they're
Xbox 2020. There you go.
That's what I would call it. Yeah, sure.
The most recent one.
People are upset because obviously the supply of these things is not going to be able to meet demand, even though you would think by this point in gaming, console manufacturers would have a pretty good idea how to gauge demand, but they don't. And as a result, people can't just go to Walmart and buy their gaming console, so...
When did these things come out? I've heard recently that there have been sellouts at the various different stores. Is that over the last couple of weeks? Was it sometime in November when they were released?
Yeah, it's sometime over the last 2 weeks or so. Mm-hmm. I don't know exactly when because I'm a PC player. I don't spend $400 on inferior hardware like console gamers do. I thought about this recently, and it actually surprises me how stupid console gamers have to be.
That's not very nice.
You have one dedicated thing. It can only do this one specific thing.
Play games.
Imagine that one specific thing designed to do that one specific thing is not the best at doing that one specific thing.
Well, I mean, how could it be? The computers will eclipse it. Even if it was the best the moment that it came out, personal computers would eclipse its power in minutes, you know, later. I mean, there's always new processors and graphics cards coming out for PCs.
But it's backwards, isn't it? I mean, the multifunction device is not supposed to be the best in any of these categories. The one that is dedicated to doing this one specific thing is supposed to be the best at doing it.
I don't know, Aria. I mean, look, I'll say this as somebody who has had both PC gaming experiences for my entire, you know, life, basically, and console gaming experiences to a lesser extent throughout most of my life.
But you stopped around the Dreamcast era, right?
No, I have a PlayStation 3.
Okay.
And I forget... You know, I think I bought that like in 2008 or something. So I've had it more than a decade at this point. And I don't remember the last time I actually played a video game on the PlayStation 3. So when the PlayStation 4 came out, I'm thinking, well, it would have to be a really awesome game for me to want to go out and buy another one of these things. And Red Dead Redemption 2 was interesting to me, but I wasn't willing to go out and spend
$400. It's also on PC.
Yeah, it's also on PC, but I haven't bought it for PC either, just because I know I'm not going to have the time. I'm not going to be able to sink the time into it. I got, earlier this year, I got the XCOM game that they came out with.
Chimera Squad,
right? Earlier this year. I still haven't finished that game, so, and I haven't picked it up in 4 months or... 5 months at this point.
Well, you've been busy.
So, you know, video games just aren't a good way for me to spend any money. But just to defend the console gamers, there's something to be said for the simplicity of it, right? So you don't have to worry about graphics drivers and hardware incompatibilities or sound issues or whatever other problems might come up with a PC, because sometimes those things do happen. Failures of equipment. Obviously, the video game system could fail as well, but with a video game system, there's only one configuration. There's only, you know, there's that graphics card that's in there and there's that processor that's in there, and you don't get to go in there and swap out cards and, you know, add more RAM. I think you can add a hard drive or something these days, or switch out a hard drive, but that's about as far as they've gone for customizing video game systems.
See, I don't know if that's a good thing, though.
It is for plug and play.
In 2020, computers are so essential to our lives that the average person should be able to install a new graphics card or figure out whether or not this hardware is compatible with this.
The average person cannot do those things.
It is not complicated, though, and you know that.
Yeah, but it is actually complicated. Like, you have to know a thing or two about computers. You have to at least have the confidence to be able to open up a computer case and swap out cards from there. I mean, it's a simple process in that unscrew screws, open case, unscrew another screw, pull card out, put card in. I mean, it's not complicated in that there are a lot of steps, but it is complicated in that it seems like it's a very technical thing. And, you know, you don't want to zap the thing with static electricity in there. So there are some risks involved. You might want to take a few steps just to be a little bit more cautious. The average person is not a computer expert. They're not, you know, just because...
No, but the average person should, I think, should be capable of a few simple tasks, right? Among yes. those is changing
turn,
a tire.
Press the on button, turn it off, well, unplug it and plug it back in. That's about as much as you can expect from the average person as far as technical abilities is concerned. And changing a tire is a different story than, I mean, it's similar but different, right?
Like, well, I mean, if you're going to drive a vehicle mm-hmm. every day for your entire life, you should know how to do some basic things like change a tire, check your oil, right?
You should.
And if you're going to use a PC every day for the rest of your life, you should know how to do some basic things like change out a GPU.
Yeah, you're expecting too much.
I always expect too much of
people.
I mean,
look, I'll admit, I have not ever myself changed a tire. Never done it.
Okay.
I theoretically know how to do it.
I'm sure you could figure it out.
But I've never actually done it.
Okay, you just never needed to?
I've never been in a situation where I've needed to do that. And so I don't have that experience.
Okay. Well, you know how. I would imagine.
In theory, I've seen it done.
And you could also figure it. I'm confident you could figure out how to change a tire.
Okay. I mean, I'm sure I could, but that's the thing. Like, I can figure out how to do a lot of things, but I don't because I can just pay someone to do it. I can hire somebody to do it. And right. so, like, I could figure out how to do all that work that's being done on your house right now.
Sure.
But I have no experience at doing manual labor like that. So if I were to try to figure that stuff out, it would take me hundreds of hours of, you know, trial and error and reading things about, you know, I have to research and watch YouTube videos and then try it out and fail likely a number of times. But
wasn't there a dude who built an entire house just from watching YouTube tutorials?
I believe
tutorials?
That there would be. And I suspect he didn't have time to do anything else.
Good point.
So
your
average person is busy, right? Like everybody's busy, unless they're a welfare whore or something like that.
Right.
They probably have a job. They probably have a family to take care of. And they don't want to learn how the computer works. They just want to play a video game.
Okay.
I don't want to know how to change all the, you know, I've done an oil change on my car. The last time I did an oil change on my car, I was a teenager. And my dad showed me how to do it on the truck that I owned at the time. And I hated it.
Yeah, I've done one oil change, and I never intend to do another. I mean, it's so much easier just to pay someone else to do
it. That's my point.
Right.
Other people feel the same way about going into their computer.
I guess that's an explanation for it. I still don't think it's wise. I think it's...
To buy a console? Is that what you... When you say you don't think it's wise...
I don't think it's wise
to
be so ignorant of a device that you're constantly using that you don't know how to change out a mm-hmm. component in it, I guess.
I mean, I don't disagree with you.
The consequences are so minor that it's not important. I mean, they can always just hire someone like me to come out and do it for them.
I see where you're coming from. But on the other hand, I turn on the lights in my house every single day, and I do not have the ability to go in and do electrical work.
No, but you can change a light bulb.
Okay, yes. I think most people can change a light bulb.
I wouldn't want the average person changing out their CPU either.
Okay,
because they're so
good.
Likely to burn that out.
Sure.
But as far as like a graphics card or RAM?
It's certainly easier to do a graphics card or RAM than it is to do a CPU. But for a lot of people, that all seems very technical. It all seems very overwhelming, and it seems kind of risky. I mean, if you're buying a newer graphics card, you may be spending upwards of $150 to $250 on that piece of equipment.
Almost $400.
Then you're going, you know, up into the higher level stuff. But my point is... That's a big purchase for a lot of people, and they may not feel comfortable going in there and just, you know, toying around with their computer and, you know, feeling uncertain about that. So to take it back to console gaming, this is a plug-and-play thing for people. They just want to play a video game. They want to be able to plug the thing in, press the power button, put the disc in the drive, and then go.
Well, some of them don't even have discs anymore.
I know that. But my point is, that's what they want. They want simple. Yeah. They want it now. You don't get that with a computer. You got to do some configuring.
Yeah, but that makes it so much more rewarding. We're going to tell you why console players are upset. 855-450-3733. It's Free Talk Live, talk radio that you control. And you can call in and talk about whatever is on your mind. That toll-free number is 855-450-3733. With you in the studio is Ariane Ian. And evidently, a UK retailer known as Very has canceled over 1,000 Xbox Series X orders. Man, that is a mouthful. They could have just called it the Xbox 4 or whatever number it is. Evidently, the orders were placed by a scalper ring, according to Eurogamer. The group claimed that it had secured more than 1,000 Xbox Series X consoles from a, quote, very well-known online retailer. This scalping ring reportedly charges £30 a month to teach its members how to turn a profit in the resale market themselves, which is surprising to me. It seems like a pretty straightforward concept, right?
Buy low, sell high.
Yeah, you buy the thing, and then you wait until it's sold out, and then you sell the thing on eBay. I can't imagine paying $30 a month to have someone tell you that. Then, in an interview with Sky News, Very said that the Series X and PlayStation 5 console listed on its website on Sunday were actually not for sale. As a result of a technical error, some people were able to place orders for consoles for a short time on Sunday. However, these items are not on sale, and affected customers have received notice that the orders have been canceled. We apologize for the confusion caused. So evidently, it was just a glitch on their website, allowing them to place orders, and they didn't actually have the consoles because these things are evidently sold out. And they were late to be delivered. The kid who does the Extra Life Foundation, he got both the PS5 and the Series X. I can't imagine.
He did get them?
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
But they were late. They were supposed to have arrived like on a Friday, and he got them the following Monday or something.
Now, why would you want to get both of them?
I don't understand why you'd want to get either of them.
Okay, well, and that goes back to what we were talking about before, but you know, the game catalogs are so similar between both Xbox and PlayStation that what's the benefit? I mean, if you're going to get a console, what's the benefit of getting both of those? I mean, is it because you mentioned during the break sometimes there's these exclusives where PlayStation will get, you know, whatever new game it is, and it'll be exclusive on PlayStation, but it'll only be for a limited period of time after 6 months or however long the exclusivity is. Then you'll see it pop up on PC or you'll see it pop up on Xbox. Is it, do you get both consoles just because you're that impatient and you have to get every single game right when it comes out for every single console that, you know, it comes out for or something?
I think with this particular example, it's just that gaming is that big of a part of his life, that it's like his main hobby. So it's like me having three guitars, you know, the slight differences between them, but it's enough for it to matter to me because that's important to me.
But isn't like just, but are there still exclusives that are only on one platform? I guess with Xbox, there probably are a few Microsoft-only games, right, where it's like Halo or whatever. I suspect that's not available on Sony. That's got to be it, right?
I don't know. I swear you can find Halo on Xbox games for Windows or the Xbox Live service or whatever they're calling it.
Well, of course. It's a Microsoft product. I'm saying you wouldn't be able to find it on PlayStation.
I don't know. You know, I've been out of
consoles
since like the PlayStation 3 era. The only console I think worth getting are the Nintendo ones, and that's because they actually do have a lot of exclusives.
You're saying you can't get those on the PC,
right?
Those games.
Yeah. Which sucks because I would much rather just be able to. I mean, that's how these companies do it, right? They release this inferior hardware, and then they force you to buy it for the software.
Well, you aren't forced to buy it. You could choose not to.
Sure. Which is what I do with the PlayStation 5 and the Xbox, whatever it is.
Well, I mean, I think that even if it weren't 2020 and people weren't locked down at home, you probably would still see these systems selling out. I mean, people go crazy whenever these new systems come out. They've got a lot of buzz about them. People love video games. Video games are a tremendous industry now. I don't know, what's it been, like 15 years? Since it feels like it's been more than a decade at least since the gaming industry surpassed Hollywood as far as the amount of revenue that, like, when a new AAA game, one of these big name games from a big company comes out, that they actually will earn more money than a Hollywood blockbuster will typically.
I did not know that.
Yeah. They crossed that threshold a long time ago. But they will
sell like 10, 12 million copies of some of these.
Right.
And it's $60 a piece.
That's a lot of money.
It is.
Right? And whereas if you're going to the movie theater, which no one does anymore because they're mostly shut down, it seems like, or they're looking bad, you're paying, what, $12, $15 max per ticket there? So the ticket price is higher on these video games. And that's not even factoring in all the microtransactions.
You get a lot more time out of the video games.
You do. You do. But like I said, that's not factoring in the microtransactions. Some of these games...
Don't let me get started on microtransactions.
Yeah, it's one of the worst aspects of gaming in modern times. But regardless of our opinion about it, they sell tons of these microtransactions. And so it can be a $50 game, but then these fanatics will spend another $200 on just like upgrading their costume in the game or whatever. It's ridiculous.
Well, thanks to loot boxes, they will spend well over $200 and may not even get the items they
want. Yeah.
They're being sued over, EA is being sued over
in
loot
Canada,
boxes.
Right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I've also got that story. I didn't really intend to get into it.
I've had that one too for a couple weeks or however long it's been.
But as far as another reason that I'm not a big fan of consoles is because they drove up the price of a video game. I mean, just 15 years ago, a PC video game was $50. That was the flat rate you would expect to pay for any new release PC game.
And now what is it?
Now it's $60. And it's because console games debuted at $60.
I don't think you can blame consoles for that. It's probably just inflation.
Well, I don't think so. And let me finish explaining why. Console games instead were $60 for the same game because $10 of that went to license the game to Sony's platform or Microsoft's platform. Mm-hmm. So they had to charge a little bit extra. Then they realized, well, there's no reason to allow PC gamers to get our games 10% cheaper than everyone else. Let's jack up the prices. And that's just what I've seen. I can't say that it's because of console gamers, but I know that console gamers said, yeah, we'll pay $60 for a game. And PC gamers shortly later found themselves buying games for $60. And they're on their way to $70 now.
I've heard about it going up to $70. But look, I mean, if you look back even further, I remember being a kid in the late 1980s, early 90s, and I remember buying Super Mario Bros. 3. Now, I don't remember a whole lot of the games that I bought, but I remember that one a lot because it was a big deal when Super Mario 3 came out.
I mean, it had its own movie to advertise it. I mean, yeah, it was huge.
Yeah. Right. There was the, what was that called? The Wizard?
The Wizard,
I think it was.
Yeah. I've never seen it, but I expect it to be bad.
So it came out in the United States in 1990, and I remember, I tell you, I think it was like $53 or something that I paid for that brand new at Kmart back in the day. Yeah, so, I mean, you're looking at maybe like $50 for around, the early 1990s, and then you went to $60 toward the end of the 90s, and now you're coming up on $70. It doesn't seem unbelievable to me that you would see prices rise over time, right, as the dollar becomes weaker.
Although, and the budget for making these games has also become much higher. I mean, the teams of people that are involved in
tremendous,
this.
Yeah. Lots more programmers and artists and things like that work on a game these days than they did back in the...
Yeah, 80s. Like Adventure on the 2600 was programmed by like one dude.
Yeah.
You can't get a game today that was made by one dude.
Well, generally. I mean, there are still some indie games.
Yeah, like Minecraft, I guess. But I mean, even then, he had help come later.
Sure.
So we're going to get off of this and into other news. Do you want your coronavirus vaccine? If you live in the UK and you don't get one, you may not be able to go to restaurants. I'm told you may not also be able to fly in the United States if you don't get one. It's going to...
Awful.
I'm still not getting one. 855-450-3733. Are you planning to get one?
Looking for a great real estate investment? Consider New Hampshire, which is ground zero for the Liberty Movement. Your first call should be to Mark Warden from Porcupine Real Estate. He's more than just a real estate agent. He's your New Hampshire concierge. Where are the best places to live? Do you want farm, city, the burbs, or forest? Do you want a duplex or multifamily building so that renters pay your mortgage? There are homes in all price ranges in New Hampshire, and Mark can help with financing too. Invest in liberty and property. Mark Warden can help.
PorcupineRealEstate.com.
It's Free Talk Live, talk radio that you control, and you can call in and talk about anything that's on your mind. That toll-free number is 855-450-3733. With you tonight, it's Aria and Ian, and Bitcoin.com is the best source for learning about cryptocurrency. You can go there now and click on Get Started at the top of the page. Once you do that, you'll find a cornucopia of information neatly organized by your needs. So there's no longer an excuse to ignore this important world-changing information. If you are a knowledgeable crypto user, check out news.bitcoin.com, where you can get the latest headlines of all the news relevant to you. Because Bitcoin.com is your source for buying cryptocurrency, getting a wallet, mining, trading, and all the latest cryptocurrency news all on a sleek and easy-to-use website, Bitcoin.com. Now is a really good time to learn about Bitcoin. My sister took my advice and bought some Bitcoin recently. I was very pleased.
Before the all-time high?
Yes. Okay. She got it Saturday. Well, I'm not declaring it an all-time high until it hits 20 grand.
The mainstream media certainly has.
Which isn't bad for it, the fact that it may actually hit an all-time high because of that. But I'm saying 20,000 is the all-time high, you know, because I don't know how close it got to 20,000.
It depends on which exchange you look at.
Yeah. But I'm patient and I'm just waiting. I expect it to get much higher. I think we're going to be looking back at this in 6 months going, you know, 9,800 was 19,800. What a steal that would have been to buy Bitcoin. So moving on with gaming news, evidently, you found something related to what we were just discussing, arguing that the price of video games should actually be lower, correct?
Well, you were saying that you thought it was the console's fault that PC games have been going up in price, and I just sort of made the argument off the top of my head that it was actually probably had more to do with inflation than anything else, given that the price of games, sort of normal prices, seems to have gone up over time, at least in my recollection.
And well, I think certain trends begin in places and then they spread to other places. I think that's a better way for me to put it. The trend of $60 games began on console and then it spread to PC, just like the trend of microtransactions began on mobile phones, mobile games, and spread to console and PC.
Yeah, I mean, I can't say I know everything that goes into what a game's price is. But I imagine at least, because there's two different ways games are distributed these days. There's physical copies, you know, on a Blu-ray disc or something. And then there's just digital delivery. Right. And of course, that doesn't have any of the costs of distribution involved. So with a physical disc, you got to pay the manufacturer. You got to pay the truckers that move the product. You got to pay the wholesalers. You got to pay the retail. You know, everybody's got to get their cut. Right. So yeah, it would seem like you would, and I've never actually looked at this, but I imagine that if you went and you bought a brand new game for the new PlayStation 4 online, you're probably going to pay the same price as you would pay at the store for a physical copy. Is that generally true? Do you know that, or is it cheaper?
In my experience with the Nintendo Switch, it is true. I mean,
same price.
Yes.
Yeah. So they're really getting you, right? Like, you know, it's not fair for them to charge the same price for a product that has zero distribution costs, right? Like, as far as digital distribution, the costs of that are next to nothing, unless, of course, you factor in that they're paying the platforms. You know, if for instance, we're talking about PC gaming, for instance, because there's different digital platforms.
Steam gets some sort of
cut. They get a cut. But when it's PlayStation and Microsoft, they're running the platform. When you're on your PlayStation, you connect to the PlayStation Store. There's no middleman in there. That's Sony, right? So,
Sony probably still gets a cut from the game publishers for.
Oh, they get a licensing fee.
Yeah.
But what I'm saying is that Sony is running the platform that is distributing the online version. So those should be cheaper, but they're not. Yeah. In the same way that if you buy an ebook and a physical book, the ebook should be cheaper.
They are cheaper.
Are they?
In my experience.
Okay. Because I thought they were releasing these things brand new at the same price. But I could be wrong. I've never actually purchased an ebook, so
I don't either because I just go to the Pirate Bay.
So according to ArsTechnica.com, last week, so this is fairly recent here. This is this is posted over the summertime. 2K made waves by becoming the first game publisher to set a $70 asking price for a big budget game on the next generation of consoles. NBA 2K21, it's not confusing, will cost the now standard $60 on the Xbox One and PlayStation 4, but 2K will ask $10 more for the upcoming Series X and PlayStation 5 versions of the game. And
I would love to know what their justification for that is.
Better graphics. I don't know. There's probably some other stupid crap, like you get a special uniform or, you know, they've probably threw some some stuff in there. But remember, there was the time when PlayStation 4 was coming out that some games were coming out for both PlayStation 3 and PlayStation 4?
Yeah.
And the only difference would be the graphical capabilities. That's the only difference.
Yeah, but they didn't cost more on the newer console.
I don't remember. Maybe they did. Maybe they didn't. It remains to be seen if other publishers will follow 2K's lead and make $70 a new de facto standard for big-budget console game pricing. But while $70 would match the high watermark for nominal game pricing, it wouldn't be a historically high asking price in terms of actual value. Thanks to inflation and changes in game distribution, in fact, the current ceiling for game prices has never been lower. To measure how the actual asking price for console games has changed over time, we relied primarily on scanned catalogs and retail advertising flyers that we found online. So they went back in time and they looked, you know, at old advertisements from the 1980s and 70s sure. and 90s and such. They said, while this information was easier to find for some years than others, we were still able to gather data for 20 distinct years across the last four decades. We then adjusted those nominal prices to constant $2020 using the Bureau of Labor Statistics CPI inflation calculator. So they're using the government's official numbers for inflation, which we all know are,
not
you know,
correct.
Low ball, right? Yeah. Like the actual inflation is probably higher than that, but... Nonetheless, they did take that into account, so that's good. To avoid the influence of low-priced bargain bin games or retailer discounts, we focused on the highest asking prices for individual games that we could find in each year. But to avoid undue skewing from outliers like the $100 Genesis version of Virtual Racing, we averaged the highest top-level asking price we could find for a basket of games representing up to eight different genres. So for NES prices in 1988, the $49.99 top asking price for Blades of Steel in the sports slot was partially balanced out by the $34.99 top asking price for The Karate Kid in the Fighting Brawler slot. So... the resulting data is a little noisy from year to year, depending on which specific games were included on extant advertisements that we could track down. Over time, though, the pricing trends are still pretty easy to spot. While nominal cartridge game prices in the early 80s topped out at $30 to $40, inflation makes that the equivalent of $80 to $100 per game these days.
Wow.
So if you had purchased a Atari 2600 game or whatever in the early 1980s at $30 to $40, that was the equivalent of paying upwards of $100 for a game today.
I mean, I grew up on the NES, but it's amazing to me to think that, you know, these games were worth $30 to $40 at the height of their popularity. Like, I wouldn't pay $5 on the Nintendo Switch to have, you know, the original Zelda again, because it's just not worth it to me.
You wouldn't pay $5 for that?
No.
Okay.
I would probably pay 99 cents. Mm-hmm. At the most, if I was going to buy it instead of just, you know, emulating it on PC. But it's amazing that, you know, that simple game with hardly any content whatsoever was worth basically the same price as Skyrim.
Well,
it's just amazing how things have evolved. It's the point I'm making.
I get what you're saying. So the argument you're making there is that you're actually getting more for your money today, right? So
yes.
if you paid $50 for Skyrim, which for listeners that don't know, that is a very intricate open world first person playable role playing game, you know, with like swords and magic spells and things like that. That came out, I think, in 2011, if I recall correctly.
It's pretty old at this point.
Yeah, it's almost a decade old. It's sort of been repackaged and re-released a few times since then. But it was tremendously popular. One of probably the most popular games over the last decade, I would guess. That game is so, you know, deep by comparison to something like The Legend of Zelda. But both of those games at their time were state of the art. I mean, they're top of their class,
sure,
high level games. I mean, at the time when Zelda came out, the world had never seen anything like that before. It really was an amazing game. And to a large extent, it's still pretty entertaining.
Yeah, I still play it.
Yeah.
What about you? Are we entirely wrong about this? 855-450-3733. Maybe games should be more expensive since there are so many people working on them. What do you think? 855-450-FREE. It's Free Talk Live, talk radio that you control. The only show where you can call in and talk about anything that's on your mind, unless you're James from Arizona and I don't feel like dealing with you because you have nothing worthwhile to say. If you're not James from Arizona, 855-450-3733 is the toll-free call-in line. 855-450-FREE as in free of James from Arizona tonight. With you tonight, it's Aria.
And it's Ian.
And we're talking about video games, specifically right now, video game prices, because there's rumors of them going up to $70 as a baseline.
Rumors. Some of them did.
Yeah, game publishers are so greedy that I'm surprised they haven't done it already. I mean, what irritates me about season passes isn't just their existence. Now, a season pass is you pay like $30 and you get the next 6 months of downloadable content planned for the game for free, except then there's a...
Is that $30 on top of the $50 or $60 for the game?
Of course.
Okay.
And then, of course, you don't get all DLC. They still release premium DLC that isn't included in
what
the season pass.
Yeah.
So given how greedy these publishers are, I have no expectation that the games are going to be $100 within a few more years. Because, I mean, they're all...
Well, right. I mean, if you're factoring in the season pass, you're already up to $100. I mean, if you pay $70 for the game itself and then another $30 for the season pass, there you're at $100 there, and that doesn't even include the other downloadable crap. You know, I'm glad you brought up the downloadable content. That was something that I noticed years ago, and I'm like, I don't like this trend.
Yeah, I like the idea. I mean, what people call downloadable content, we used to call content patches. Now we have to pay for them. And I still like the idea of, you know, breathing new life into a game that you like.
Sure, but there's nothing wrong inherently with that idea. But if it's...
Or we call them expansion packs.
Yeah, I mean, it's one thing if the game comes out and it's complete and, like, it's a good experience. And you don't feel like you have to go and get the downloadable content or the expansion pack or whatever. But to know that they make these games and they plan the downloadable content, you know, for after the fact means they are trying to milk people for as much as they can get out of them. And, you know, if they can get it, then, I mean, that's obviously why they do it, right? Because people are that desperate for something to do, I suppose, that they feel the need to buy every little downloadable content thing that comes out.
Batman Arkham City is probably one of my favorite games of the last decade, and they cut out the entire Catwoman section which was ready to go at launch and was part of the game and was built into the story. I mean, it's
like,
a critical part of the
story. No, we can charge extra for this.
And that's exactly what they did. It's absolutely disgusting. That they even have DLC sometimes on disc, that's even more frustrating because
it's locked down.
Yeah, that's literally something that was ready at the time the game released.
Wow.
Why isn't it part of the game? You know, DLC should come after. It shouldn't be built into the process from the beginning.
I mean, it's almost got the feeling of like a bait and switch, you know, especially if they're putting it on the game disc as well. So you're actually, when you pay the money for the game, you get the data. You just don't have access to it. You got to pay extra for that. And it's too bad. I mean, I hope that there are still some games that come out that don't go this direction, that, you know, you just pay for the game and you get the game and that's it. And then, you know, if there's enough worth releasing that they come up with later, okay, fine, I get that. But like a game like XCOM Chimera Squad, it's its own self-standing game. Yeah. It's using probably the most recent XCOM engine was that they used on their last game. So, you know, they didn't have to reprogram the engine. But they also only charged like $10 for it when it came out. So, you know, they didn't – I think I got it at a special price. But like brand new, the normal price was $20. So it wasn't a high-tier price or anything like that. And you didn't need the original game to run this one. So like that – didn't seem like a tacked on thing. That was like, oh, this is a completely separate game, but the development wasn't as expensive because they didn't have to make a whole new engine for it, so they just put it out as its own thing. So that, to me, feels better as somebody who's buying a game than just feeling like I'm getting nickel and dimed just to be able to play an entire game experience.
That's one of the things I like about Bethesda and Skyrim in particular, because they did have downloadable content, but it was misnamed. They were really expansion packs. Mm-hmm. They had four because they were massive. They added a ton of content into the game versus, you know, a special costume that you can buy for $5 or whatever. These were actual legitimate expansion packs. But the guy who's heading Bethesda has said in interviews that it frustrates him that we have people playing Skyrim a decade later, and yet Bethesda isn't making any money from it.
Yeah.
So that Elder Scrolls 6 is going to have microtransactions.
Oh, God.
I'm 100% positive. Yep. It's frustrating, man. And they want to make even more money. I mean, no amount of money is enough for gaming publishers. It's disgusting what they're doing. Season passes, DLC on top of that, some DLC not included in the season pass, plus microtransactions in AAA games on top of it, like Dead Space 3, where you could speed up your building times and stuff like that. Because every game has to have a crafting system now. I think that's finally going away.
Tired of that crap.
Yeah, so am I. But you could just pay money to make all that go away. And some of the newer Mortal Kombat, you know, you don't have to know the code to do a fatality. You can just pay 50 cents to use an easy fatality. I think that was Mortal Kombat 10. Yes. I don't remember what they were called, but yeah, you could just pay 50 cents or whatever.
Are you serious? How do you do that in the middle of the game?
I imagine you'd have to
stock
pause
them
it.
Up. You like stock them up. You've got like an inventory of cheapy fatalities that you can just pay. And anytime you hit a special button, you don't have to put.
Presumably, for listeners that don't know, I would never do it.
For listeners that don't know what we're talking about, you know, if you're over the age of 70, back in the 1990s, a game called Mortal Kombat came out, and it was a very controversial game at the time because it was quite violent. And we're talking about 93 or something like that. In arcades, it was an arcade game first, and it came out on all the home systems. Nintendo, back in the day, wouldn't allow blood on their game system because it was, you know, family-friendly. So you'd only, like, see little white bits of sweat come out from the characters as you attack
terrible.
Them. But most of the other consoles did have the blood on there. And now, there have been, as you said, Mortal Kombat 10. So there's been a ton of these games that have come out. It's always been the same sort of ultra-violent, ultra-bloody. But in the recent versions that you're talking about, starting with number 10, it really got gory. Like, I mean, because before it was sort of like cartoony. Yeah, I mean, it wasn't cartoony in that they actually had digitized photos of people back in the original Mortal Kombat. They actually had pictures of actors that were the game characters. So it did have sort of, for its time, a realistic look. But now it's like so gory. Like, even I, who have been desensitized to, you know, video game violence over the years, even I, watching these things, had thought, wow, that's going a little overboard. Like, they're pulling out spines and just really, like, grotesque.
Well, they've always been pulling out spines.
Yeah, but like, disemboweling people and just really, like, grotesque, like, super horror movie level kind of gore effects in a video game. Like, even
you're making
I was
me want
shocked.
To play Final Mortal Kombat 10.
It's got those things in the game. And, like, it's so absurd that, like, they'll do some of these ridiculous, just bone-shattering moves on these characters in the middle of the match, and the match will, like, stop for a few seconds to show the animation of somebody, like,
Nine had those as well.
Bashing somebody's head in, and then a second later, the character's still standing, and you get to fight, you're still fighting with the person. It's the old Mortal Kombat games, you'd wait till the very end, and then you'd do the finishing move, and it pulls their spine out, or whatever it was that they did. But in the current game,
but you had to know how to do.
Right.
There
was a certain series of buttons you had to press within a certain time frame, and it was hard. It wasn't an easy thing to do. So now what you're saying is they can just go ahead and buy a pass for the finishing move, and they can just hit a button, and then it just finishes the person, and they don't have to like spend the time to actually learn how to do it or practice it.
As I understand it, yes.
Wow.
I've never used one, though, because Mortal Kombat 9 was the most recent one I played, and you could pause the game at any time and see all of these special moves, including the fatalities.
No kidding.
Yeah.
Oh,
so you don't have
to
look them
secret.
Up. I did. Yeah. You used to have to actually know these things, but now you don't even have to do that. You can just pause the game, look at what you need to do, and enter those buttons. Or you can pause the game and use an instant fatality easy pass. It's bizarre, man. And it's just another way for these companies to make money. I imagine they've sold some of these.
God, they must. People are lazy.
It's amazing how exploitative video games have become, because if they're not just doing that, I'm surprised, in fact, thinking about it, that Mortal Kombat didn't make fatalities unnecessarily complicated just to sell more of these fatality easy passes. You know, make them require 15, 20 different button presses like Primal Rage did. That way people are like, oh, no, I'm not learning all of this. I'm not even attempting it. I'm just going to pay 50 cents or whatever it costs.
You used to pay 50 cents just to play an arcade game back in the day. Now they want you to pay 50 cents just to do one move.
I don't know what the cost is as far as what these.
I bet you it's not less than 50 cents. I mean, it's not even worth running the credit card for less than a dollar.
Well, you probably have to buy them in a pack of 50.
Because you know how these... Yeah, that makes sense. Man, what a scam.
Gaming is in a bad place, dude.
I know.
It has been for a long time.
I just don't feel like I'm missing out on much anymore.
You're not. And I don't feel like that... like I'm missing out on anything either. The most recent game I think I played was probably actually Skyrim.
Bitcoin.com is the best source for learning about cryptocurrency. Go there now, click on Get Started at the top of the page. Once you do that, you'll find a cornucopia of information, neatly organized for your needs. If you're a knowledgeable crypto user, check out news.bitcoin.com where you can get the latest headlines. Bitcoin.com is your source for buying cryptocurrency, getting a wallet app, mining, trading, and all the latest cryptocurrency news, all on a slick and easy-to-use website. All put together by the best minds in the business to teach you about cryptocurrency. Bitcoin.com.
Free Talk Live.
It's Free Talk Live, talk radio that you control. You can call in to talk about anything that's on your mind. 855-450-FREE as in freedom. With you tonight, it's Aria and Ian, and we're actually talking about video games here, which is funny because neither of us has really played a video game in several months.
But I have a love for them. I mean,
I do too.
I grew up on video games, and I really do enjoy them. It's just that I enjoy normal life more nowadays, so...
My interest
been that way for a while.
It's not that my interest in video games has declined, but my willingness to play video games has declined over the last decade or so. Like when I was in college, I would gladly spend, 6 hours a night playing video games. But now I don't spend 6 hours in a month playing video games. I think the last time I did was during the summer when I didn't have to do a whole lot of work.
Yeah.
Because, the college kids were gone, so there was nothing for us to do, and I took some time off.
Sure.
But I did forget about those. The most recent game I played was, in fact, Resident Evil 3. I can't believe I forgot about it. I've played it a lot over the summer, as well as Resident Evil 2. They didn't have a lot of DLC for them, which is surprising because apparently some critical part of the content was cut from the original Resident Evil 3 and not included in the remake.
This is a remake. Okay, yeah.
And apparently people expected them to add that in the form of DLC, and Capcom never did. Good on them for that.
Mm-hmm.
Capcom is not overbearing in its DLC, and there were no microtransactions or any of that nonsense in these games.
Yeah, I mean, not every game is coming out with these microtransactions, because I think there has been some pushback by people against them, and that's a good thing. I'm glad to see that happening.
It is.
Because it's tiring to see all that crap.
Let's go to the phones. We've got Ingrid calling from Maryland. Ingrid, you're on Free Talk Live.
Hey.
Hey, what's on your mind?
Ian and Aria.
Hi, Ingrid. What's up?
I got an old school story about Ron Paul for you guys.
Old school? All right.
Yes. So remember when Ron Paul ran for president, it wasn't the first time, but when he really got the numbers.
I think 2008 was his best.
That was his big year for sure. Yeah. And then 2012 was also big too.
Yeah, like I was in my late 20s.
Mm-hmm.
And I was in charge because McCain won the Republican nomination. So Ron Paul set up an alternative Republican thing for his fans.
He did an alternative what?
An alternative Republican convention?
Ran and they had the Republican Assembly in Minnesota, and then Ron Paul did his separate thing in Minnesota.
Was that because he wasn't invited to the original? I remember I think it was 2012 was the last time he ran. They retired him at the Republican National Convention and didn't actually invite him. They just celebrated his retirement.
Really?
It was really screwed up. I mean, they were happy to see Ron Paul go away.
What are you saying, Ingrid? You're saying that in 2008, Ron Paul had his own convention that was competing with the Republican convention?
Yeah.
I do vaguely recall that, yeah.
Yeah, I was in charge of the Maryland thing. But the thing is, right after that happened, because at this time I was in my late 20s, and there was this guy, Patrick Ciccioni, and he was murdered.
Oh, my.
As some people say, because I can say that because now Elijah Cummings is dead. because he had found out because he was working on two campaigns, and he found out that Elijah had said that this Hispanic guy, that he had a pregnant wife, and he went to the gas station, he got murdered, and then Elijah.
I have no idea what you're trying to tell me.
That he cradled. You never heard of Elijah Cummings?
Maybe I've heard the name at some point in the past, but I mean, if this is like some Republican or Libertarian activist, I mean, the name doesn't.
No, it's a Democrat.
Okay, yes, okay. I have no idea who these people are. What's the point of the story, though?
Well, I'm getting to that. So a lot of people thought that either Elijah Cummings or a corrupt cop put a hit on Patrick because he was only 29, and then he was found, and it was supposed to be a motorcycle accident, but he didn't have any like bruises on him or any scratches, because I had my blood taken 2 weeks ago, and I have this big bruise on me. It's like, how the hell does that happen?
I don't know. Probably one of those things that'll never be solved.
Ingrid, thank you so much for the call. Interesting story
of that was.
I've seen people have motorcycle accidents, and I mean they're pretty brutal a lot of times, especially if they're
hard to survive those.
Yeah. So you've got more numbers on the fact that video games are approaching the $70 mark, it would seem, and that's probably not going to go away. And this author is arguing that they should, in fact, be cheaper. And I would agree entirely.
No. The author is arguing that $70 is cheap when compared to inflation-based pricing. So if you go back into the 1980s and you look at the usual $30 to $40 price tag for games back in the early 80s, they say that after you inflate or that after you adjust for inflation, that's going to come out to $80 to $100 per game these days. So buying a new game at $70 these days is actually below the inflation-adjusted prices for the 1980s. That's what they're saying.
And that's factually true.
Right. So it's
but
seems
I would
high.
Argue that the reason for that is because the games back then were overly priced.
No, they would have been priced right at what the market was willing to pay.
I agree. But I don't know how to phrase what I'm trying to say. I agree. I mean, obviously, you're factually correct. Mm-hmm. They were priced at whatever people were willing to pay.
Right.
But in hindsight, I guess I would say they were priced too high.
Your evidence?
I wouldn't pay $40 for the original Zelda today, no matter how
much
I love it.
We're not talking about today.
I know. That's why I said in hindsight.
Well, that's not.
I would argue that
they were too
high.
No, you can't do that. You can't say that this thing isn't worth $40 today, so therefore it wasn't worth $40 in the 1980s.
No, I'm giving you that it was worth that then.
Yeah.
Because that's what people paid.
Right. So you can't say that in hindsight it's too high. In hindsight, that's the exact right price for the time. Now you could not market that game for $40 because people expect more from their games.
Which is another valid point. The games have not just gotten cheaper according to inflation, but they've also gotten bigger and better.
Well, it depends on who you ask as to whether or not they're better, but they are definitely bigger and in many ways more intricate. And they, as you pointed out earlier, do involve more people as well, right? So there's, despite the larger and ever-growing staffs, the total amount that you have to pay for the game is actually cheaper now compared to what it would have been after adjusting for inflation. So there's more, though. As the industry transitioned, this is ArsTechnica.com reporting, into 16-bit cartridges in the 1990s, though, nominal prices for top-end games rose quickly past $60 in nominal dollars, and that's about $110 in 2020 dollars today. That's in large part because of the expensive ROM storage and coprocessors that often were included in those games. By 1997, late-era Super Nintendo and early-era Nintendo 64 games were routinely selling for $69.99 at many retailers. And
really?
I remember that. The brand-new N64 games, they were pricey. The highest, because those were cartridges.
I thought they were 60, but I was really young then.
Probably the CDs were. Because the CD manufacturing was cheaper, but N64.
Well,
was
I was
cartridge
late
based.
To move to the PlayStation, so I was an N64 fan.
The highest nominal prices in the industry has generally seen, and still the equivalent of over $110 in today's dollars, meaning that $70 would have been more than $110 in today's dollars in the late '90s. The late 90s transition to disc-based games relieved a lot of the cost pressure on physical game production, which translated to generally lower prices for consumers, but that pricing transition didn't happen immediately. Early Saturn and PlayStation games in 1996 would regularly sell for $59.99 or more, translating to about $100 in today's dollars. Disc prices settled down to a more reasonable $49.99 soon after that, because again, manufacturing got more capable and prices went down because of that, setting a functional nominal price ceiling that would remain until the mid-aughts. It wasn't until the Xbox 360 and PlayStation 3 that top asking prices started increasing to $59.99, and that ceiling has remained in place to this day, even as digital downloads and the explosion of indie games has meant many titles at launch now come in well below this price, right? Because a lot of the cheaper games, the indie games, the lower budget games, you can snag for $20 or $30, right?
Right. And you're arguing that because... We'll get back into it. 855-450-3733. This is Free Talk Live. It's Free Talk Live, talk radio that you control, and you can call in to talk about anything that's on your mind. That toll-free number is 855-450-3733. With you tonight, it's Aria.
And it's Ian.
And we're talking about video games for the most part tonight, how the industry has changed, in my opinion, how it's largely declined.
For the worse.
Yeah, it's not looking good for games in general. But before we get back into it...
Well, it's looking great for games. I mean, they're making money hand over fist. It's just not looking good from my perspective. I'm not that interested in microtransactions and endless downloadable content and constantly having to pay more and more and more just to have the same, you know, to continue with the same game.
I would agree. But before we get too deeply into it, you know, you've heard us talk about Divi here on Free Talk Live, and maybe you've wanted to set up one of their masternodes or stake Divi so that you can start earning Divi right now. Ian has actually set up a masternode. He said it was super easy and that staking Divi was even easier. We're not investment advisors here on Free Talk Live, but we think you'll be impressed with your earning potential with Divi as compared to traditional investment vehicles. Go to DiviProject.org and get started. You can get Divi at several exchanges or directly from the Divi team if you don't want to adjust the prices when you buy it. Need help? Well, they have a link to their Telegram channel right on the front page at DiviProject.org, DiviProject.org. And you were just making a point. Can you run it by me again? Because I talked about Divi and forgot what I was actually going to respond with.
Well, in the last segment, we were talking about the prices of gaming. Was it that point that you were talking
about?
Yes,
I remember. No, thanks. Thank you. So I have a system mostly for buying games where I won't buy them. I will just pirate them until the game is complete, at which point I will buy it. Usually
the collector's edition where it has all the DLC.
Yes, this is what I did with Skyrim. I'd been playing Skyrim for like 6 years before they released the legendary edition that was actually complete.
Right.
And I got it for $40 on Steam, which is what I would expect to pay for a full-length game.
Yeah, that's what I was going to suggest to people earlier when we were talking about these DLC, this endless DLC. It just keeps on coming. At some point, they sort of stop with the DLC, and they collect it all together in the, you know, what do they call it, the Game of the Year edition or the Collector's edition or whatever, and then they slap it all into the same disc. And then you can usually get it for about the same price as when the game came out brand new, but it's got all the stuff in it. So for those who are willing to wait, or as you said, pirate the game, which, you know, that takes a little bit more technical know-how and it can be a little janky sometimes.
It can. And sometimes it takes months for a crack to come out. So you can't always do this, like Rise of the Tomb Raider. I think it may not be cracked to this day.
Really? That's unusual.
I don't recall.
Crack game. Usually the crack groups have the crack out right out the gate. I mean,
it was like
fast.
A month into it that was the last time I looked, a month after its release, and they were expecting another 6 to 8 months because they were having a hard time cracking, I think it was Denuvo 3 or something.
Well, of course, console gamers don't get those things at all. So
That's true.
A console gamer and you want to avoid the DLC charges, then just wait a year and then get the Game of the Year edition or the
FOMO, collector's
edition.
Fear of missing out. They can't
wait.
Well,
yeah, that's why people buy things brand new.
That's why, you know,
they pay the most.
The Dawn Guard and Dragonborn expansions for Skyrim released at, I think it was $30 for retail.
Jesus.
Instead of, you know, $5 6 months later is what they normally cost.
Yeah, in gaming, you can play way more for way less if you just are 6 months to a year patient, if you can just wait. Because, like, it's still going to be the same game whether you play it day one or day 180 or whenever the price goes down.
So. But what I've noticed among the people I work with is that they will, like, a new game will release and they will all sit back there talking about it when they see each other. Mm-hmm. And if they wait those 6 months,
they're on the outs.
Yeah, they won't be able to have that conversation about right. the latest Assassin's Creed or whatever. So I don't know, man. I would rather just pirate the thing or mm-hmm. wait. But that's me.
I don't get video games to have a social life with other people about it. But let's talk more about the pricing, though, because there's more here from Ars Technica. So they're talking about how over time the price of games has risen in sort of normal dollars. But when you adjust for inflation, actually the cost is down. And then, of course, you factor in the fact that they're actually paying even more people now at these game companies.
But how does that work when inflation also means that our money is worth less today? Like, the money that we use to buy the game, we don't make as much of it with wages. Mm-hmm. So I think looking at it as a perspective from how many hours one has to work in order to buy the game mm-hmm. would be a more useful metric.
Well, you're working fewer hours to buy a game today than you would have worked in 1980.
I'm going to look up these numbers.
Yeah. I mean, that's just how it is. I mean, the minimum wage in the early 1980s, I don't think was more than $3 an hour or something like that. I'm just guessing.
Well, I'm curious about the average wage then and the average wage today.
Oh, okay. I don't know what the average is.
Well, in 1980, the yearly income was $12,500 on average.
Yeah, so $30 is more to a 1980s person than $70 is to a 2020 person. That's kind of the general point here of this story. So after adjusting for inflation, we can see the actual dollar value, the 2020 dollar value of top-end disc-based games, plateaued for right around $70 for almost a decade through the aughts and the early tens this decade, or this last decade. Inflation has slowly eroded that value in the last decade, though, to the point where a $10 increase like the one just happened for NBA 2K21 merely gets games to the same actual price point as they enjoyed earlier in the century. As the real value, quote, of big-budget games has increased, publishers have looked for new ways to squeeze more money out of the average player. Trends like collector's editions, widespread downloadable content, season pass subscriptions, all of these things we've discussed already, and annoying microtransactions have meant some players already spend much more than $60 for a single top-end title. Raising a game's basic asking price to $70 won't eliminate publishers' need or desire to exploit these further revenue streams, but it may help make up for the bottom-line deficits brought on by ballooning development costs for graphically intensive titles in the console's coming ray tracing era. So,
well, I have no sympathy for the game developer, for the game publishers and the console manufacturers who are saying now, oh, well, this push for having the latest graphics is too expensive and we have to include these microtransactions to pay for it. They created this situation in the 90s of where it was all about the graphics. Mm-hmm. The games didn't matter. How good does it look? They brought this on themselves.
Well, but you're going to have to pay for it if you're a gamer.
You pirate it.
Those additional costs may be hard for many gamers to swallow, just as similar increases for streaming video subscription services have been over the years. That's especially true now that there's so much gaming competition from lower cost and even high quality free-to-play titles. And you know, I got to agree with that. Some of these games that are coming out that are from these indie groups, you know, again, I don't have a lot of time to play games, but I do still kind of pay some attention to some of the news about games that are coming out. So if I were to have bought a game this year, besides the XCOM game that I did buy, I would probably have gotten Streets of Rage 4, which is a sort of a beat-em-up, side-scrolling beat-em-up game in the sort of the classic Final Fight series. Right. Streets of Rage was originally released in the 1990s on the Sega Genesis, and they actually brought back this game after 25 years. They made a sequel to it, and it looks fantastic, but it's, you know, it's a short game. It's a six-level game or whatever, and you can probably hammer through it in a matter of a few hours. But honestly, that's a better game for me than a game that costs 100 hours to play and costs two, three times as much, because, you know, it's hard for me to sink 100 hours into a video game. So I think the indie game manufacturers, especially in times where people's time is more stretched thin than ever, have a real marketable segment to market to because of that.
Indie games in general are in a really great place. I mean, the most selling game of all time is Minecraft, and that's an indie game. Technically,
didn't Microsoft buy it?
But it was created as an indie game.
Okay.
And I mean, it was at that point as an indie game. This is Free Talk Live.
Having taken her father's throne, Sarah Calhoun has fallen out with one of her best allies, and her brother Nathaniel heads into Imperial Philadelphia with a reckless plan. Her uncle Thomas, armed with new powers and new allies, aims to remove Sarah from her throne and from the world of the living. To survive and to gain the strength she needs to fight an impossible war, Sarah must unite the Mound Builder Kings to enact an ancient rite that will propel her beyond mortality. Servant Daughter by T.J. Butler is the newest entry in the Dragon Award-winning Witchy War series from Bane Books. At BaneBooks.com.
It's Free Talk Live, talk radio that you control, and you can call in and talk about whatever's on your mind. 855-450-3733. With you tonight, it's Aria and Ian, and things are weird on the other side of the pond, the United Kingdom. Things have been weird there for a long time. The people of the United Kingdom have seen the police state, the overbearing police state coming, and they seem to welcome it.
Well, not all of them.
Much more so than we find here in the United States.
We actually just reported yesterday over the weekend, there were tremendous numbers of people in the streets of London walking around with no masks on, with anti-mask and pro-freedom placards and signage and things like that. Over 150 arrests were made. In this particular case, there's been some massive pushback recently in the UK.
Why were people arrested?
Just because they weren't supposed to be out.
Figures.
Yeah, it's lockdown, and people are out in the lockdown protesting.
Good for them.
So, there's some people.
That's good to hear.
Yeah.
Brits who refuse...
Way more, mind you, than in any American city.
That's depressing.
Yeah.
Brits who refuse the COVID-19 vaccine, however, may be denied entry to restaurants and bars.
Oh, yeah, yeah. You heard about the Freedom Pass?
I did, yeah. We talked about that last week.
Right. Is that part of this?
No.
Oh, okay.
It's in the same vein.
Sounds like it is.
Now, the Freedom Pass, for those who don't recall or weren't listening to that show, is this scheme, and they even called it a scheme, by the United Kingdom's government to, if you jump through all of their hoops and you take enough... COVID-19 test, and you can prove that you're negative for, I think it was a 2-week period.
I think you have to keep proving it, though, don't you?
You do. You get a Freedom Pass, which will allow you to live a normal life as much as you can. I think you would be allowed to go out in public. You wouldn't have to wear masks. You wouldn't have to socially distance. You would still be encouraged to. But if the police accosted you and like, hey, why aren't you wearing a mask? You'd be like, I have a little permission slip. So no coronavirus vaccine, no service. Possibly Brits could soon be denied entry to restaurants, bars, movie theaters, and sporting events if they refuse to get a COVID-19 vaccine, a top official said Monday. Zahawi, the minister in charge of the United Kingdom's vaccine rollout, said that information about whether people have received a coronavirus vaccine might become available on the phone app already used for contact tracing. Now, I haven't used one of these, obviously. I've not used one of these apps for contact tracing. I would love to hear from someone who has. Is it really as bad as I would imagine it to be? And it's hard to characterize how bad I would imagine it to be, but this is an app that basically collects everywhere you go, everyone you encounter, and it shares that information with some centralized government bureaucracy that uses it to track people down. Are they actually required in places?
I don't know about that. That's a good question. It wouldn't surprise me if there were some countries that are requiring this, but I have not heard about that yet. I imagine they're trying to just incentivize its use. I remember hearing about something like that up in Canada, where over 1 million people or something like that had downloaded it, or 1 million downloads. I don't know if that means it was 1 million people. But, you know, so I think they're just trying to persuade people to do it because, you know, you don't want to kill grandma, so you should get this app.
So Zahawi told the BBC, I also think you'd probably find that restaurants and bars and cinemas and other venues, sports venues, will probably also use that system as they've done with the app. So what they're planning on doing is putting your vaccination status inside of this app. Yeah. I wonder if it is, I can't help but wonder if it is mandatory, and I can't help but think, are we in the near future going to see a Supreme Court battle over whether or not the U.S. government has the right to force us to install something onto our phones?
Yeah, I mean, we are definitely entering some scary territory as far as technology and tracking and things like that are concerned. It's hard to say how far down this road they're going to try to push it and how fast, but judging by what they've gotten away with so far, it wouldn't surprise me if they tried to shove it down people's throats in a pretty serious manner. But, you know, all that remains to be seen. Google and Apple have some sort of COVID something that they've built into their operating systems, and I'm not really sure what exactly, you know, that is, but there's something in the settings of my phone about COVID.
Yeah, there is mine as well. Yeah. This is the first phone I ever owned that I did not root and install something like CyanogenMod or
Yeah, this
Lineage
is also
onto.
My first phone that I did not do the same thing.
And I'm regretting that.
I unfortunately, because it's a Google phone, I'm on the Google Fi system. I could do it, but it would actually strip away the main purpose of Google Fi. The one thing that none of these rooted operating systems can do with Google Fi is the switching of the phone's service. So Google Fi operates on three different phone providers. So okay. T-Mobile, Sprint, which I think they now combined, but they still have different towers, I guess. And then what's the third one? T-Mobile, Sprint, U.S. Cellular. So if you put a rooted version on there of what you were talking about, CyanogenMod or the newest thing, Lineage OS, that it just won't. They just haven't figured out a way to make that functionality work. So if I want to have the most functional phone as far as service is concerned, I can't do that anymore, which sucks because I sort of enjoyed that little hobby of rooting phones and
I did too.
Putting different operating systems
on it. Did you ever brick one? I bricked one.
I had bricked but was able to unbrick.
Okay. This one I couldn't unbrick.
You really bricked it. Okay. Yeah.
I mean, it was for a, and I'm not sad that I did it. It was for an attorney client. Mm-hmm. I made him aware of the risk.
Yep.
You know,
this could happen.
Yeah. It was a phone they wanted to use as evidence because it was some custody battle and the phone had been used to buy drugs and they wanted to use that to nail the father in court. And I was like, okay, look, I will try to get this information from you. So I'm not sad I bricked it, right? All dude did was buy some Xanax.
Right. Whoopee.
Yeah. I don't particularly care. And I don't think that necessarily made him a bad father.
Right.
But yeah, it was Verizon. It broke the thing, mm-hmm. and no way to undo it. I was like, sorry, don't.
Oh, well,
yeah, that's the only time I ever bricked one. Sprint used to be really open. They weren't like supportive of rooting and modding, but they turned a blind eye to it. Mm-hmm. But Sprint also closed down my account several years ago for using too much of the unlimited mobile data. Mm-hmm. Because I was tethering it, but I was using mods like PDAnet and stuff like that, so it wasn't showing up as mobile tethering.
I see.
But there's really no other explanation for how you managed to download 300 gigabytes of data
on
in a
cell
month.
Phone.
Yeah. Yeah. So the government is pressuring people
to
comply.
You found their limit, the unlimited plan.
And it does include in the contract I signed with them that, hey, if we find that your network activity harms the network, we will close your account. But yeah. Other customer service representatives I spoke with at the time, they were like, that's not what happened. They didn't shut you down for using too much of the unlimited data plan. But once you got to a high enough level, yeah, that was mm-hmm. exactly why they did it. So the government is now pressuring people to comply. They've always been doing that, though. But they're strangely open about it here in this article, at least in the UK. This sort of pressure will come from both ways, from service providers who will say, look, demonstrate to us that you have been vaccinated. But also, we will make the technology as easy and accessible as possible. So it's going to be this massive propaganda campaign. And we probably will see legislation requiring businesses to ban entry to people who have not been vaccinated.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I hope you're wrong about that. It's hard to say what we're going to see and what we won't in the United States. I think that you are going to see tremendous corporate compliance with this regardless of legislation because it's really the mega corporations that are the big pushers of the whole wear a mask, mask required thing, all of that. Because before there were mask mandates, almost every mega corporate shopping destination had mask signage up. So
they did.
Corporate America has been on board with this from the beginning.
But corporate America is also not penalized when they don't enforce it. If you go into Walmart without a mask, the city of Keene isn't going to fine Walmart for still servicing you.
No, they probably aren't. Although, to be fair, the city of Keene has yet to fine, from what I understand, any business in the so-called mask mandate. So it hasn't really been strictly enforced, but that's ultimately because most people are doing it. Most people are doing exactly what they're told to do, and it's these mega corporations that are helping create this feeling of compliance that's going on everywhere. Yeah. So if they weren't so just excited about all of this and eagerly jumping through all these hoops before the government even mandates them. It really just goes to suggest that all of this is some sort of a plot by, you know, the Bilderbergs or the World Economic Forum, and that some group of mega corporate, mega politician types are orchestrating this for some reason.
To what end would be the only question?
It's a wealth transfer.
It certainly has been that.
But it's also destroying a lot of wealth.
What do you think? This is Free Talk Live. It's Free Talk Live, talk radio that you control, and you can call in and talk about anything that's on your mind. That toll-free number is 855-450-3733. With you tonight is Ariane Ian, and you can join us and other voluntarists, anarchists, and libertarians from June the 28th through July the 4th for ForkFest 2021 at Rogers Campground in the beautiful White Mountains of New Hampshire. ForkFest happens the week after the Porcupine Freedom Festival. But ForkFest is decentralized, which means that no one's in charge and there's no ticket cost. All you have to do is reserve your camping site, your RV site, or motel room with Rogers Campground for June the 28th through July the 4th. And where better to celebrate Independence Day than around other freedom-loving activists in the Shire? You can find out everything about it at ForkFest.party. There's a forum and a link to the unofficial Telegram chat. Again, visit ForkFest.party. It's happening June the 28th through July the 4th at Rogers Campground, and I can't wait. Well, I don't know how to introduce this next thing we're going to talk about. So I'm just going to tell people the headline and then let them bask in its glory for a few minutes. Bodybuilder finally marries beloved sex doll in groundbreaking ceremony. We're going to talk about that, but before we do, we want to go to the phones. We've got Dick calling from Alaska. You're on Free Talk Live.
Merry Christmas, y'all. I hope y'all are doing well.
Thanks, Dick.
You as well. What's on your mind?
Well, I just wanted to give you guys an update on an executive order or an emergency order that just took place in Anchorage, Alaska today. I believe it was signed last week. So calling a national news show, I really don't have a right to complain to y'all, because I know down there, in most places, it's significantly worse with the lockdowns and whatnot. And actually, where I live, we're pretty well open, which is just outside of the municipality of Anchorage. But Anchorage just passed its Emergency Order 16, and is putting the city back on lockdown. So I just wanted to share some of the wisdom that they had in there.
This is just the city. This is not the entire state.
Just the city.
Okay.
But it's actually the municipality, so it's more like a county.
Okay.
But that's half the state, basically. Anchorage is really the only city we have up here of significant size. You could maybe throw in a couple more, but they're the only really big city.
Okay.
And about half the population of all of Alaska is there, and a good chunk of the population doesn't live there, commutes and works there. It's kind of a hub.
So what did they do?
So they passed an executive order. Basically, they call it a hunker down order. This is the third time that they've done a lockdown in some degree. One was, I believe, in April. The last one was in August, which was to reset. Didn't do anything, so I don't know why they're trying it again, because nothing got reset in the 4 weeks that they shut everything down.
Well, it never does. I mean, we're entering the 10th month now of a 2 week lockdown.
Well, I'll defend them a little bit, because they're not taking away all your rights. They're benevolent. They're giving you some privilege, you know. So
who?
A lot of the places are shut down. I was looking at bingo halls, and I think the bowling alleys are shut down. But if you're a restaurant, you can still be open for takeout and dine-in service, too.
Well, I'm not going to get excited about people having their rights taken away and being replaced with privileges, because that's a loss of freedom.
Well, I was being facetious.
Okay,
they let you eat outside in Alaska.
How cold is it in Alaska now?
I should have called about a week ago when it was in the 20s and blowing snow. Mm-hmm. It happens to be in the mid-30s today, so we got a real
sounds like really nice eating out weather.
Inside, less healthy than eating outside right now, you know, in Alaska, even though it's freezing cold.
And, so in Anchorage, you know, cannot eat indoors?
It's illogical, but don't worry. They said you can put a tent. You can put a tent up, and then that should keep some of the warm air in.
Hold on. They want you, they said it's okay to put a tent around your outside table at a restaurant?
Yes.
People want that to be open.
You can't have a fully enclosed tent. It's got to be half open. 50% airflow.
Oh, really? Oh, that's interesting. Because in other places, they actually have what they call igloos. So in Boston, for instance, and in other cities which are obsessed and afraid and constantly in a fear factor over all of this stuff, the restaurants are, you know, they're not allowed. Either they're not allowed to open inside, or they're afraid to open inside because their customers are afraid. So even if they did open inside, they still probably wouldn't because their customers are too cowardly. So they've started to invest in these igloos, which are not 50% open like you're saying. There's just like an opening and you go in, and then there's like a heater, I guess, that's in the igloo because, again, these places are cold, right? Boston, outside in the evening or whatever. And so people are literally sitting in igloos outdoors eating at restaurants. That's how crazy this is.
When they shut us down in August, they let us eat in tents as well in Anchorage. And I don't think anyone did it, but you could tell in this executive order that they had heard about it and that they had anticipated it, because someone had planned, you know, those tents that they put over houses when they debug them, fumigate them? Someone wanted to put a tent over a restaurant and say, okay, the whole restaurant's in a tent now, so now it's safe.
That's funny.
But it's interesting. I haven't heard anything. You know, I haven't heard the news if anyone's fighting it. In August, we had a couple of restaurants really fight the lockdown. Some of them stayed open, incurred about $15,000 worth of fines. Of course, the courts are closed, so you can't go fight it. But they were able to get a judge in the middle of the night to issue those fines. Funny how that works,
wow.
Right?
Yeah, it's not surprising. Keep us surprised on how things are going in Alaska. I'm disappointed to hear that Alaska was one of the top contenders for where the Free State Project was going to go to. Sad to hear that the people of Alaska are having no more luck fighting this than we are here in New Hampshire.
Yeah, well, he did say that it wasn't as bad in Alaska, and according to the states with the fewest COVID-19 restrictions, now this was a list that was published back in October, so it may be a little out of date, but it's the most recent one that I've got here. This one lists Alaska at number 12, so not great, but also not the worst by far.
What do they consider the best?
South Dakota.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Where is New Hampshire at on this list?
Not good. It's at number 26.
Oof. And it would be substantially worse today, thanks to Sununu's recent mask mandate.
Good point. Yeah. But then again, you know, I don't know what these other states have done either in the meantime.
True.
So. But South Dakota has been sort of leading clearly by the governor there has refused to go along with any of this crap, apparently. Although I've heard she's also a theocrat, so she's got her downsides too.
They all do. Yeah. I mean, they're politicians.
Yeah.
So this bodybuilder has married a sex doll. This is all coming from dailystar.co.uk. I don't know anything about the website, but the very next story that they're advertising to people is real doll sex robot sold on Black Friday wows people with AI hyper-realism.
Yeah, so, right. No, it's a tabloid. I mean, the Daily Star is a tabloid.
Okay, so there's a chance this isn't even true.
No, I mean, there's real pictures here. Now, whether it's true or not is another question. Whether this is a troll job or not is another question. But this guy, this guy that apparently got married in
Kazakhstan.
Kazakhstan. You know, he really has 59,000 followers on Instagram.
Okay. I mean, good for him. So they describe it as finally marrying his sex doll after delaying the ceremony for months. I wonder if he finds it offensive to refer to his wife as a sex doll.
Well, she can't find it offensive. So are you saying that he should find it offensive the way he refers to her?
I'm not saying he should. I'm just wondering if he does.
And does he refer to her that way? Or does he call her my wife?
Yuri from Kazakhstan has been living with Margot, the name of the sex doll, evidently, for a year and a half, and says he popped the question back in December 2019.
And she stared at him.
He first met her at a nightclub. And the
How does that happen?
I imagine this is just a story he invented to justify. I mean, there are people who marry their pillows or who date their pillows or what. I don't know what these people do. And they invent similar backstories to how that happened. So he met her at a nightclub, his sex doll, and the pair were due to get married in March this year. Or maybe he was at a nightclub when he stumbled upon the ad to buy a sex doll.
I don't know what the truth is here.
He told the Daily Star that the ceremony was delayed a second time after he was attacked during a transgender rally in the Kazakh city of Almaty on October 31st. He suffered a concussion, that explains a lot, and a broken nose after dressing as a woman for the march, posting pictures of his gruesome injuries to Instagram. There's more on this story. It gets weirder. This bodybuilder who married his sex doll. This is Free Talk.
Freedom!
Freedom is the call of the untamed Scotsman and all others that want to feel the wind under their kilts.
At Free Talk Live, we love the breezy swinging feeling that only a kilt from Sport Kilt can give.
We teamed up with Sport Kilt to let you experience their form of freedom at a discount. Go to kilts.freetalklive.com and see a picture of Richie and me in our kilts.
And then head over to sportkilt.com. Get some stylish freedom for yourself and use code FTL for a 10% discount. Sportkilt.com.
It's Free Talk Live, talk radio that you control, the only national radio show where you can call in and talk about anything that's on your mind. 855-450-3733 is the toll-free number. With you tonight is Aria and Ian. And are you tired of being intelligent? Then I have an excellent suggestion. Watch Killer Sofa. That's my bad movie recommendation of the week. It's just this googly-eyed recliner that falls in love with the girl. Okay, that's the first thing you should know. It's about a recliner. Okay.
And it's got eyes?
Well,
so it's anthropomorphic or something?
It's the folds of the cushion very clearly make it look like a mouth. And it has these two button-looking things, like, you know, you find on furniture, that are clearly positioned to be eyes. It's very goofy-looking. And the whole movie is completely stupid. You will feel dumber after watching it. And odds are you will be dumber after watching it. But I would still recommend it. It's available for free on Tubi if you can deal with the advertisements. Killer Sofa. Check it out if you want to be just a little bit dumber. In other news,
keep listening if you want to be a little bit dumber, too, because we've got the story for you.
We do. So this bodybuilder has married his beloved sex doll. And, you know, I was thinking about this while I was out there on the break. And I think he's actually making a point here. So let's get further into it. The pair have finally tied the knot at a ceremony attended by dozens of guests.
There's video of the ceremony, too.
Sharing footage of the celebration on Instagram, Yuri wrote, "It's happened, to be continued." In the video, Yuri slips a ring onto Margot's finger before the pair share a tender kiss. They then take the first dance in front of a delighted crowd. Now, keeping in mind, he is marrying a sex doll, in case people missed that particular news. So there's this bodybuilder who puts a ring on the finger of a sex doll, kisses it tenderly, and then dances with it.
In front of a group of purportedly his friends.
Describing the earlier attack on him, Yuri said, "A few months ago, I started using a female image for performances. I named this character Amanda. Through this image, I convey certain ideas in our society, so I was beaten."
This was him dressing as a woman and was attacked in public.
Yuri attended the rally dressed as Amanda and shared a video of his courageous protest and the assault that unfolded. A man was recorded tearing off his wig before flooring him with a punch. This is evidently, it's also got this on Instagram, so evidently this did actually happen. The bodybuilder identifies as pansexual and can fall in love with, quote, "a character, an image, a soul, just a person." He explained, "I like
and apparently a completely lifeless sex doll."
He explained, "I like the process of sex itself. And gender, sexual orientation are not particularly important here."
Or actually having another human being present, apparently.
Discussing his sex life with Margot, Yuri added, "Our story turns me on much more than the sex itself. I also love BDSM." Wow. He goes on, I quote, "I love being tortured. I can endure a lot of pain. I love to dominate, too. Margot is capable of what other people, real people, are not capable of."
You added the real people line.
Yes.
Okay.
"According to earlier local media reports, his union with Margot should stand. The only requirements for a wedding to take place in Kazakhstan are that both consenting parties have to be male and female and over 18 years old." And I think that's the point he's trying to make. It's probably a pro-homosexual marriage point. And like I say, you should let these two men... I mean, you're recognizing a marriage between a man and a sex doll as legal. And
but
you're
Kazakhstan
respecting
does not recognize gay marriage?
Yes.
Oh,
I suspect that's the point he's trying to make. Of course.
Well, let me tell you, he's pretty deep into this particular point. I'm looking... So I just put his name into a search here and found an article back from December of last year where headline at the time, "Bodybuilder proposes to sex doll after getting it plastic surgery." Same guy.
It mentions the plastic surgery here as well.
Yeah. So, you know, and then it links here to her Instagram. So he has an Instagram for himself and an Instagram for his lover.
Or his sex doll.
And you know how you can just like scroll down the page and it just keeps loading photos on Instagram? And I've been scrolling and scrolling and scrolling. And so finally, I just got to the bottom here. The first photograph was from August of 2018.
Okay.
This has been going on.
Yeah, this is real. This is not just a troll. And this is
well, that's what I'm saying. I mean, if it is a troll or if he's trying to make a point about Kazakhstan's gay marriage or the lack thereof, he's been pretty deep into this. I mean, we're talking about lots of photos of this sex doll and him with the sex doll in various different, you know, exotic locations and things like that. Yeah. I mean, I'm inclined to believe this is possibly real. Either that or it's just a brilliant troll job or...
I mean, whether he's trolling or not, it's for sure real. There is a bodybuilder in Kazakhstan.
He really does travel around with a sex doll and really does photograph himself with the sex doll. Yes, that actually happens.
"Due to apparent fears about her appearance, Yuri decided to book Margot in for plastic surgery earlier this year." Now, does your article describe the plastic surgery? Because this one doesn't. I'm just curious.
Don't know.
What he did. So he explained, "When I presented her photo to the world, there was a lot of criticism and she began to develop a complex. So we decided to have plastic surgery." She has changed a lot. "At first it was hard to accept, but I got used to it later on."
Now, wait a minute. Is this the recent article you're reading?
Yes.
All of these quotes appear in the 2019 story as well.
"It was at a real clinic with real doctors." Can you imagine the look on a doctor's face if you bring in a sex doll and you're like, "I want to have plastic surgery on this sex doll"?
So there's actually a video of him with her on an airplane. So like he's definitely like bringing her around and being seen in public with this sex doll. I mean, it could just be an act.
In which case, there are stranger performances.
Yeah, yeah. In which case, it's hilarious. If it's real, then it's pretty sad. But people aren't going to know the difference, right? They're just going to see this and they're going to be like, "What is going on?"
He's not a bad looking dude. I mean,
he's quite handsome. I mean, he's a bodybuilder, and
He wanted to find a real woman, I imagine
he could.
Yeah, it wouldn't be too difficult. So he chose the sex doll,
right?
Very strange.
But he did say he likes kinky, violent sex. And, there are other people that are into that. But, you know, at least with a sex doll, you don't have to worry about whether or not, you know, you break an arm or something like that. You know, you can just put it back on.
Plastic surgery to hide the scars that you gave it or whatever it is he's doing.
But, you know, aside from I think the glaring question as to whether or not this is real, because that's ultimately my biggest question about this.
And what do you mean by whether or not it's real?
Meaning, is he putting people on or is he like really in love with a sex doll?
Okay.
What's the truth about this situation? Or does he just want subscribers on Instagram, right? Like, I don't know. And we don't know. But the reality is, sex dolls are real, and there are people out there buying them. Now, I suspect most of them aren't parading around with them like this guy is. You know, presumably most of the customers of sex doll companies are keeping those things to themselves, and they're not, like, telling their friends about them, that sort of thing. They're not buying a sex doll for the purpose of normalization of sex doll relationships.
Do you think we're going to see the same sort of stigma around sex robots? Because those are certainly coming.
That's what I'm saying. This is sort of like the beginning of that. You know, once they have the dolls, and then from what I understand, you know, they do have the, I mean, this is a complete mannequin, basically, right? With a sex port on it, presumably, or more than one. And
probably so, three, I would speculate.
Yeah. And so, you know, it does bring up the question of what are relationships going to look like in the future? How disconnected people are going to become from one another. I mean, just look at what we see around us now with people being told to not even see their family members, to not even, you can't go to Thanksgiving, you can't go to Christmas. You know, the government is basically telling people you have to stay at home. We've got lockdowns happening in various cities all around the place. People are still going to have a sex drive. Mm. And so things like sex dolls are going to allow people to get off without having to involve another human being. And I think there's something that's wrong with that. But ultimately, I think there's some percentage of the population that's going to go for it.
I'm just glad that I haven't seen sex doll ads on Facebook as a COVID-19 safe alternative to having sex.
Give them time.
This is Free Talk. It's Free Talk Live, talk radio that you control, and you can call in and talk about anything that's on your mind. That toll-free number is 855-450-3733. And I want to tell you about AnyPay. AnyPay 2.0 is here, and crypto payments are now faster than ever if you're using the Edge Wallet, Handcash, Bitcoin.com, or the Dash Wallets, that is. In that case, your experience should be smooth, but some wallets aren't ready for the impressive new technology. And these wallet programmers need to hear from you, the wallet users. Visit anypayinc.com/upgrade to learn why some popular wallets are incompatible with AnyPay 2.0. And reach out to the wallet programmers and encourage them to make payments perfect at anypayinc.com/upgrade. I do love AnyPay.
Me too.
So we're talking about sex dolls here on Free Talk Live, strangely enough, and the future of sex robots. Mm-hmm. And you asked me, I pointed out during the break that I would be willing to own a sex doll.
Sex doll, not a sex robot?
No, a sex robot.
Sex robot, okay.
A doll seems like it would just be a waste of time. I mean, what's the point with that, right? So I would not be willing to buy a sex doll, but a sex robot, sure. Mm-hmm. But it wouldn't stop me from having sex with other human beings. It would mostly be a matter of convenience. Mm. Oh, it's 4 o'clock in the morning. I'm tired. I don't want to actually put in the effort to seek out and find a human being to have sex with. I'm just going to masturbate in this other way.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
That would be the point in that case. But, you know,
So what's the difference to you between the sex robot and the sex doll? In your mind, would the sex robot be able to sort of move on its own and, you know,
I would imagine
the sex doll wouldn't be able to do? Is that the idea?
Well, a sex doll is just going to lie there lifeless.
Right.
I don't think I have it in me to have sex with an inanimate object that's just lying there.
Right.
You know, it seems like the ability to move to whatever capacity and to react to what's happening, mm-hmm. even if it's just some false moaning and mm-hmm. writhing around, is critical to the process.
That doesn't seem like it would be just as strange to you?
I didn't say it wasn't weird.
Okay.
I'm a weird person. I'm just saying I would be willing to have one under those circumstances.
I gotcha.
It would be strange. I have a penis and I'm wearing a skirt. I'm accustomed to strange.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah, I mean, hey, whatever floats your boat. I mean, I'm not going to come down on somebody for, hey, if this is the way you want to do things, then that's fine. I think that we are entering a time when people are going to be more solitary, when they're going to be even more disconnected from other humans than they've ever been. And I don't think that's a good thing, ultimately. I think that, you know, as we've been discussing with the mask situation, that regardless of whether or not you think it's a good idea for, you know, safety's sake, and I think there's not much evidence that it is, but I think that it is a bad idea from humanity's sake, from disconnecting people with one another. These masks are taking away our connection with other human beings, and things like sex robots and, you know, these sex dolls could also do something like that as well. Make people even more insular, make them even more disconnected from people.
But I think the opposite is likely to happen.
Really?
And let me explain why. Well, I think it's going to happen in a different order of events is what I mean. I think that, we know for a fact that isolation causes people to become
crazy.
Not crazy. What am I looking for?
Suicidal.
Attached to inanimate objects and to start ascribing personalities to them and things like that.
Right. That's kind of crazy.
It is. Yeah. But isolation makes people. Yeah, sure. Yeah. It goes crazy.
Isolation is torture.
It is.
Yeah.
And it causes people to fall in love with inanimate objects. Mm-hmm. So the longer this isolationist crap continues, the more likely we probably are to see people falling in love with their sex dolls and their sex
robots.
That's
what I'm saying.
Right.
But and I don't think that's a good thing.
Well, sure. Okay. It will feed into itself with people becoming more and more disconnected because, there's no need for me to actually go out and have sex with someone or to have a relationship because I have the sex doll and that's good enough.
And maybe there isn't a need anymore, right? Because a woman can get herself pregnant by insemination. She doesn't need to have a man or a partner in order to do that. Technology is making these things of the sort of individual lifestyle with no other humans being involved in any sort of intimate manner more and more possible than it's ever been.
Well, it may not be necessary, but it's certainly fun.
What is fun?
The act of having sex with another human being.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Well, and to me, and obviously everybody's different, right? Like this guy, this bodybuilder in this story, again, presuming that it's not a total troll job and that he's actually saying what he really believes, that, you know, he's commenting about his sex life, that he's really into sex. But what it sounds like is he's really into getting off and not sex, right? Because you can get off in a variety of different ways by yourself, right? The sex doll is the most recent version. I mean, they've had some level of these things for a long time, but they're now much more expensive. I think you looked it up over the break. It's like $6,000. And I don't know if that's the low end or the mid-range or what.
It's the one advertised or talked about here on the site with the AI hyper-realism that is wowing people.
I highly doubt that it's that realistic, but that's all market speak. But regardless, he's saying he's really into sex. He's really into getting off.
Yeah, he's not having sex.
He's not having sex. He's, having sex with himself, ultimately, in this case, which is fine. Again, I don't want to come down on somebody for that. But to me, sex is different from self-pleasuring in that I'm more interested in pleasuring my partner during sex. Like, to me, that's the rewarding part of sex, is to be able to help somebody else feel good. And you certainly can't get that from a sex doll. So
no, you can't. Not even these hyper real ones that coming to us from Real Doll. Evidently, it does seem like a paid advertisement in places, but it points out that, some of these sex dolls are remarkably human looking. And at a first glance, you really probably wouldn't know that they're a sex doll. The question I have is whether or not these things...
Except
actually
for the fact
move.
That the person's carrying them around.
Right. Sales have also surged during the coronavirus pandemic, which has forced millions around the world to stay inside.
I believe it.
And now they're going to fall in love with those sex dolls because they're in isolation and they're forming emotional attachments to inanimate objects.
Yep.
Real Dolls is offering a discount on some of its AI dolls ahead of long and dark winter nights.
I don't know what they mean by AI, but I'm sure it is rudimentary at best. I mean, there's no sort of AI that is in any way, shape, or form like impressive these days, is there? I doubt it.
I wouldn't want a sex doll to have much AI in the first place. I mean, recognizing whether or not it's hurting me would be a good feature, but beyond that, I don't...
Well,
I don't want to wake up in my sleep murdered by my sex toy, Well, I wouldn't wake up, I guess, but I don't want to be in the news.
Right.
Arya DeMatteo, former sheriff candidate, murdered by sex robot. So too much AI would be a bad thing.
That would be a surprising ending to your story.
With customizable features such as eye color, would it really be that surprising? Yes. I feel like a lot of people would go, yeah, sounds about right.
No, because you always, you don't have any problem getting real partners.
No, not at all. Okay. It has a lot of changeable features, including nipple color. I don't even know what to say. Kudos. I'm glad humanity is going in this direction. I don't want to shame people. Okay. More sex is, or more sexual freedom is a good thing, in my opinion.
Okay.
Free talk.
What if the United States and the Soviet Union had fought on land, sea, air, and the astral plane, struggled for dominion across parallel dimensions or on the surface of the moon? What wonders would have been unveiled? What terrors would have haunted mankind from those dark and dismal dimensions? Come closer, peer through a glass darkly, and discover the horrifying alternative visions of World War III from some of today's greatest minds in science fiction, fantasy, and horror. Weird World War III. Available now from Bain Books at BainBooks.com.
This is Free Talk Live, talk radio that you control. You can call in and talk about anything that's on your mind. That toll-free number is 855-450-3733. With you tonight, it's Aria.
And it's Ian.
And calling again from the prison here in New Hampshire, we have Chris Cantwell calling on the line. If I can remember which one. There we go. Chris, you're on Free Talk Live.
I'm actually calling you from the jail. I'm not in prison just yet. I have been convicted of a felony, and I face some time, but I get sentenced next month. So hopefully I can walk right from the county jail, but I might have to go see the inside of a federal prison. We shall see.
Indeed. And you are in as a political prisoner on essentially free speech charges, but that's a whole other story. What were you calling about tonight?
I'm calling about, did you guys see the new Life Alert commercial featuring Joe Biden?
No.
Oh, yeah, it's hysterical. So Joe Biden, he's out playing fetch with a fire hydrant because he thinks it's his German Shepherd. And when the fire hydrant doesn't go fetch the ball, he gets angry and he kicks it, and he fractures his foot because he's got osteoporosis because he's old and stuff, and he falls down and he says, "I've fallen because of Donald Trump."
Wait a minute.
who made this?
All right, so you might be unfamiliar. You guys don't, like, watch political news all day. The liberal press has been fawning over their chosen candidate for president of the United States because he got a hairline fracture in his foot, mm-hmm. and they say that he got it because he was playing with his dog, and apparently that's newsworthy. So they've been all wondering, is Joe Biden okay? And by the way, he's going to get a cat. There's going to be a cat in the White House if this theft of the presidency succeeds. So,
So he actually did break his foot, but was it because he kicked a fire hydrant, or is that just the...
No, so the official story is he was playing with his dog, mm-hmm. and he fractured his foot. He got a hairline fracture in his foot. Mm. And the people who were knowing about that story might have found what I said humorous, I'm thinking, because I don't know that that's true. I think it's everything about Joe Biden is a lie. How did you get a fracture in your foot playing with your dog?
Yeah, it seems like
he's pretty old.
I mean, what is he, 74 or something, like 78 actually, according to the internet.
He just turned 78. When he takes office, if this scam is allowed to go through, because keep in mind Joe Biden was not elected president, but if this con is allowed
to go
through. What's that?
I think he was, though.
Well, now the official results don't come out for two more weeks, right? Isn't it the 14th or something that the results are supposed to come out from the Electoral College?
Yeah, if we're unsuccessful in stopping the steal, then Joe Biden will be sworn in as president. But just so you know, there's no way that 80 million people voted for Joe Biden, okay? I could have gotten more votes than Joe Biden if I had the same technology at my disposal as he has. Then I could have gotten elected president of the United States and pardoned myself and everybody else. But I don't control the voting machines, and so I'm not going to be able to do that.
Weren't the voting machines in these cities controlled by a company that is essentially run by high-level Democratic operatives?
Well, some of those connections are yet to be completely established. But what we do know is that it's statistically impossible. I would really encourage you to look into this and do a show on it, dude. Like it's what happened is he won in four cities, okay? And it's such a ridiculous scam. Like he underperformed with with blacks, for example, like everywhere except for in these four cities. He underperformed under Hillary Clinton all over the place except for in these four cities.
Mm-hmm.
Because these four cities were in swing states. These cities were controlled by Democrats. These Democrats bought these voting machines that had been used in Venezuela. Like the voting machine manuals, these Dominion voting machines, you can probably find the manual online. I haven't seen the PDF, but I've heard them discuss it on other talk radio shows. Like, it talks about the tampering vulnerabilities in the owner's manual.
Hmm.
Like, why would you do that? Like, just fix the vulnerability, you know?
Well, I mean, the entire system is fraudulent.
To the internet while people are voting. Like, why would you do this? Haven't you seen Hacking Democracy? Like, what nonsense is this? You would only do this if you wanted the election to get stolen. The mail-in voting, the whole thing is a scam.
Well, here in Cheshire County, you know, I ran for sheriff, and I got more than, no, Eli Rivera got more than 7,000 votes in the town of Westmoreland, which has a total population of 1,700. So, I mean, the entire system is fraudulent. Everywhere that you have a human being, you have an opportunity for someone to enter a number wrong or mm-hmm. to miscount or to read a number incorrectly. I can't have faith in the system, whether they use paper ballots or electronic ballots. For all I know, they just invented a number and threw it at us. Mm-hmm. And there's no reason to believe otherwise.
And that is the thing more than the machines, right? So, like, for example, they had, like, there was eyewitness testimony of, like, people pulling up with, like, truckloads of new ballots at, like, 3 o'clock in the morning. Like, they said in Fulton County, Georgia, which is where Atlanta is, they said that a water main broke and it was going to, you know, they had to get everybody out of the building, so we're going to stop the count for tonight. And it turned out it was, like, a backed-up toilet. It wasn't something to, like, put the building in jeopardy. And the Democrats, they stayed there counting all night. And while they were counting all night, somebody pulled a truck up with ballots, with boxes and garbage cans and bags full of ballots. Well, like, yeah, if you don't have, like, tight controls over this, if, you know, you don't have your opposition looking over your shoulder and, you know, it presents the opportunity for fraud. And I mean, it's just rampant. And, you know, anybody who watched, I would encourage, if you want to know more about this stuff, they had a televised hearing in Lansing, Michigan today. There was another one, I believe, in Arizona yesterday. Like, Rudy Giuliani's traveling around the country, like, having all these eyewitnesses say about all the chicanery they saw. It's a complete fraud election. There's no way Joe Biden got more votes than Barack Obama. It didn't happen. The guy never left his basement.
Well,
it's an interesting point. I mean, how can you possibly be such a success putting zero effort into the election, or near to zero?
What did they say? How did they say because that Hillary Clinton Trump. Lost the campaign? They said that she didn't campaign in Wisconsin. She didn't campaign in Michigan, whatever, right? Well, Joe Biden just didn't campaign. Joe Biden wouldn't even – they're like, hey, Joe Biden, we think you're going to pack the Supreme Court. And he's like, we'll talk about it after I win. Like monumental. The guy won't answer questions. The guy won't do anything. He won't leave his house. He's like, oh, COVID-19, you know what? I'm going to make all of you wear a mask. You're going to do what I say, and don't ask me any questions, you idiots.
Do you think the Trump supporters, if Biden is actually, you know, elected come, you know, mid-December when the official results come in from the Electoral College, if Biden is the winner, do you think that the people in the Trump camp or the Trump supporters will recognize it, or will the Democratic conspiracy theory that somebody apparently was promoting on CNN recently come true, and Trump will actually have his own separate inaugural party, and that people will start recognizing Trump as the true president to the United States, and that you will then have a potential schism in the United States?
I don't think that Trump's going to try to have a parallel inauguration. If the Electoral College nominates Biden, if the Electoral College elects Biden, then Biden will take the office of the presidency and he will be viewed as an illegitimate president by more than half of the country.
They're all illegitimate.
What's that?
Well, yes, of course.
But I mean, like, in the eyes of, you know, people who aren't anarchists, Satan reformed churches or whatever. Like,
I mean, that was true of Trump as well, though. I mean, half the country didn't think he was a legitimate president.
They still paid taxes. They still did what they were told,
they
right? Will the Trump people continue to consent is ultimately the question.
They will continue probably to bow to the guns of government mm-hmm. with all but a few who probably lose their minds and go out shooting or something. But, yeah. You know, what will most likely happen is if that is allowed to occur, then Trump 2024 begins on January 20th, 2021, and he's going to be, you know, jet-setting across the country, doing rallies, a few times a week, preparing for his, you know, run for the presidency in 2024.
Which he'll then be, 78 or something like that? at that time?
He'll take office as the second oldest president ever to take the oath.
Yeah, because he's 74 right now.
Just under Joe Biden. And he will, and then he will, he'll be sharper than Joe Biden was in his prime, because Joe Biden is a dementia patient who shouldn't be allowed to take a math test for kindergarten.
I mean, he is definitely senile on occasion. There's no doubt about that. Some of the videos of him talking are horrifying.
Yeah. Hey, thanks for the political analysis there, Chris. Appreciate it, man.
All right, take care, guys.
Thanks.
Yeah, good luck out there, man. I wonder if he would say the same about Trump's broken foot when Trump is 78 years old. I don't believe he actually broke his foot playing with the dog. How can he do that?
He was just joking about that. It was funny.
It was. 855-450-FREE. If you're quick, you can still get on the air with us. 855-450-FREE, as in Free Talk Live, and as in Free Cantwell, the political prisoner. This is Free Talk Live, talk radio that you control. You can call in and talk about anything that's on your mind, and we're the only radio show that allows you to do that. And it's all thanks to amplifiers like MuseFan, who is a gold-level amplifier. That means he donates $10 per month to the AMP program. Now, AMP stands for Advertise, Market, and Promote. It's money that is used strictly to help advertise, market, and promote Free Talk Live. And so if you want to help us, if you like the show, if you want us to get on more radio stations, joining the AMP program is the best way to do it. We'll say thank you to MuseFan. Again, that's amp.freetalklive.com. You get a number of cool little features like an AMP-only Facebook group, an AMP-only call-in line, and some other cool stuff. Again, amp.freetalklive.com.
No one cares about the Facebook group.
I sure don't.
No one has asked to be entered into that group in a long time. Like, I don't remember the last
time
it happened.
That's encouraging.
Yeah.
So let's go to the phones. We've got Dave calling from Colorado. Dave, you're on Free Talk Live.
Hey, folks, formerly known as Dave in New Hampshire and soon to be known as Dave in New Hampshire again.
Ah, okay. Yes. Yeah, this is Dave Ridley from RidleyReport.com, who makes a lot of videos online. He actually mentioned you in a recent video.
He did.
Right?
I saw that when you confronted Eli Rivera. That was
No. Earl Nelson.
Oh, Earl Nelson. Yeah. That was awesome. Thank you for that, Dave.
Yeah, that was the write-in candidate that was trying to take you out of the race this year.
And
for
he
sure.
failed.
Yep.
Yeah, well, thank you for running and getting so much attention. You know, the level of activity is fairly high.
It was fun.
Yeah. So, what's going on, Dave? How's where are you at in Colorado, by the way?
Well, hold on. Before you answer that, I had a question as well. When did you record that video with Earl Nelson?
I have a big backlog of videos, so that was about 3 weeks ago, I think.
So okay. Just after the election.
Right.
Okay.
Okay.
And so, to his credit, I was afraid he would say, the election has happened. Bye. But he answered the question on face value. So at least that was good. But he was pretty evasive after that, wasn't he?
Mm-hmm. He was.
He couldn't get out of there fast enough.
So Ian had asked what part of Colorado you're at.
Yeah, I grew up in Colorado Springs. That's where I am now. My folks live here, and I come back to visit now and then.
What are there any things that you noticed going there now? Obviously, it's 2020, and there's all these restrictions in a lot of places. Does Colorado seem worse or better as far as restrictions to you, just at a glance?
I've just been here for hours, my understanding is, traditionally Colorado tends to be about the same as New Hampshire in almost every metric. You know, there's just slight differences. It's about the same level of freedom as New Hampshire. It's got roughly the It's got slightly more beauty. The temperatures are about the same all year long. So it's very similar, actually, in a lot of ways to New Hampshire. But in terms of the fly out here, I thought you had asked me maybe about how it was flying out here, and it wasn't any worse than I would have expected. There wasn't a whole lot super interesting to tell you about that was surprising. But I was actually calling about something that happened in New Hampshire.
Sure. I just wanted to get your opinion about that. Actually, on the list of states with the most coronavirus restrictions, Colorado is ranked at 46. So it's actually way down the list compared to New Hampshire. And certainly as far as the overall freedoms, if you look at the freedominthe50states.com, that is one of the – or actually, I'm sorry, is it Freedom in the 50s? Anyway, I'll pull it up. We'll find out where Colorado is on the list. I don't think it's anywhere near New Hampshire. You made it sound like it's competitive with New Hampshire as far as freedoms, and if I recall correctly, it's probably not even in the top 10. But I'll check that.
Yeah, I would call it less free than New Hampshire, but close to New Hampshire in terms of how much freedom. And sometimes it beats New Hampshire out, you know, when people go and they rate the states on the level of freedom. Sometimes Colorado beats New Hampshire out, but not usually.
Oh, actually, it is up there in the I'm surprised. Colorado at number four. So, yeah, you're right about that, Dave.
And New Hampshire is second, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, and it's a really neat type of freedom in a sense in Colorado in that you – it's not the type there's what I call Wyoming type freedom, and there's New Hampshire type freedom. And New Hampshire type freedom is where they sort of take advantage of all the immigrants, you know, to get more freedom out. So the immigrants come in and they're more pro freedom than the people that already live there. That's kind of how New Hampshire is. And the same phenomenon I think is happening in Colorado over the years. You know, just like Wyoming has freedom because there's no one there, right? But Colorado has it because people flee here, and it's really nice, and it's. Mm-hmm. And I think that has a positive effect. It's just such a nice environment. It just makes people nicer. I don't know how to explain it.
All right. So what were you calling about tonight?
Anyway, have you guys already reported, because I have a backup story, but have you already reported on the on that store in Loudoun that the Attorney General just came after in New Hampshire?
Oh, yes.
Okay, so I can report about something else.
No. I don't know what the store. Aria said yes, but I don't know what you're talking about.
I said yes because I assumed that this was the store that was fined that caused us to go out and protest at the Attorney General's house. But Ian's reaction.
No, they've gone after several places. So we didn't go to the Attorney General's house after one place had been fined. There were at least I think four or five by the time we went to the Attorney General's house last week for the protest. But what's the one in Loudoun?
This is a report in the Associated Press on November 26th. It says a country store in Loudoun. So the Attorney General fined them. And apparently, the local authority said we had to go back 10 times to warn them. After they kept getting warned, they put up a sign and it says, "Quote: Please refer to the Constitution of the United States. We know how to wash our hands, clean surfaces, and not cough or sneeze on people. If you can do that and stay 6 feet away like someone tooted, please come in," unquote.
Good advice.
So what's going on with the store? I mean, they got hit with a fine. Are they going to fight it?
So the authorities retaliated with about a $2,000 fine.
Mm-hmm.
And they were, quote, cited for a musical performance.
Oh, is this the – wait a minute. Hold on. You said this was Loudoun. Are you sure it's not Lincoln? I thought the place was in Lincoln. Maybe I misread the story.
So is this about the band where the members Loudoun weren't 6 feet apart?
Yeah, there were like a guitar player and a singer or something, and they weren't 6 feet apart, right?
This one is Loudoun Village Country Store. There's also White Mountain Tavern.
Okay.
That took a $1,000 fine. So let's see which one it was that. I'm having difficulty telling which one it was.
Just so you know, Dave, from what I understand, the one that's in the Country Tavern, I believe that's the one that's in the northern portion in Lincoln, which is sort of up in the notches, as they call it, in the mountains here. It's not all the way up north like Forkfest or Porkfest, but it's on the way up there. From what I understand, that one is actually owned by a Free Stater.
Nice.
Yeah.
Okay. So yeah, one of the two is planning to appeal the fine, mm-hmm. but I'm getting confused as to which one put up the sign about the Constitution.
Well, I mean, it's not necessarily important who did it. The fact that someone did it is impressive, and I hope that we see more of it.
And the fact that some of them are refusing to obey. I do see here an image of the sign at the Loudoun Village Country Store, according to CBS Boston. They do have what you were talking about with the whole refer to the Constitution. So that was it. Now, the tavern, on the other hand, was the one cited for the musical performance, and that is the one where two guitarists were too close together, according to government bureaucrats. So they've been issued a $1,000 fine while the country store has been hit with a $2,000 fine.
Insane. Dave, thank you so much for the call. Let's keep going. We've got Scott calling from Florida. Scott, you're on Free Talk Live.
Good evening, everyone. I want to just say thank you for taking my call, Lee, and I didn't get the lady's name. I know I've spoken to you before.
Her name's Aria.
Not much. Aria, Ian and Aria, I know we're not much time. I'll make it short and sweet. I wish Christopher Cantwell the very best. I hate the United States government, and I hope he can get out as soon as possible. So I if you're hearing that, Christopher, don't give up hope, and hopefully you'll be out. That'll be a good Christmas present for you. You'll be a free man from this tyrannical government. Let me just spit it out what I wanted to say very quickly. COVID-19 may be killing lots of Americans, but Americans' freedom and the American economy have already been killed. Main Street has been completely obliterated by all these phony shutdowns and quarantines. And furthermore, Big Brother has taken total control of Americans' lives. George Orwell was exactly right. He was a genius. He was 70, 80 years ahead of his time. God bless George Orwell. He knew exactly what he's talking about. Big Brother has, as I said, taken total control of our lives. And the American economy, what really disturbs me is the American economy has literally been forced to commit suicide over COVID-19, which, in my opinion, is a brilliant excuse and smokescreen for the 1% to kill off the remaining 99%. And I'll just wrap it up by saying this new world order, and make no mistake, it is a new world order, is right out of the Saul Alinsky and George Soros playbook to manufacture in a deliberate and
Scott, I got to cut you off. Sorry about that. Thanks so much for the call. The last time we spoke, you actually said you were going to give some thought into your bigotry. That video is on my YouTube channel. Check it out. See if that still rings true. See if you still want to recount the whole Nazism thing that you support. Thanks for listening. Head on over to freetalklive.com.
Remember when you first heard about Bitcoin? How long did it take you to realize this little project would soon change the world? Do you kind of wish you had gotten involved sooner? Well, now is your chance to be part of the next revolution in money. Intercoin is working to finally make crypto go mainstream. It's designed to be scalable enough to support everyday payments and even elections without the state. Bitcoin was originally supposed to be a peer-to-peer cash system, the way we would all pay one another without having to trust any third party. But instead, over time, it mostly became a store of value. That's because every 10 minutes, the Bitcoin network must put all transactions into a block, and that block can only hold so much. If crypto is to become mainstream, for everyone to use it in everyday payments, we need a new architecture, one that's as secure as Bitcoin while being far more scalable. Check out intercoin.org to find out more, and maybe pick up some of those coins for yourself.